Board member questions? Just curious, in rough numbers, how many comments have we received by the deadline?
I'm going to say on the order of 200. 200 and, actually it's more than that, I think it's 240 or so. Mm. I don't have an exact count.
I can get an exact number at least.
And the response, and you know, we'll receive comment. We're taking comments today through this workshop process. How does that get handled?
Thank you for asking. I meant to touch on that earlier. The original notice for the public review period for this TMDL had the comment period closing, the written comment period closing prior to this workshop. But explicit account was taken of that in the public notice that oral comment provided today would be part of the public record for the action on this TMDL. So written comment period closed on August 27th. Oral comment received today is also part of the record.
And just so everybody knows, today we are filming these proceedings. We don't generally do that. We have an audio tape, but today we're making a tape of this, and that'll be online, as I understand it. Is that correct?
I don't know exactly what the plans are, but certainly the audio is routinely made available online.
And how do you sort through comments made today? I mean, how do you decide what to respond to? And there'll be a lot of things contributed. How do you decide? And
well,
for written material, the same.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the whole exercise. I mean, we group comments, and we're in the midst of that process, and we've tried to summarize our current groupings on that. Typically, what we do is look for themes in those comments, and then respond to comments in groups if we can. Catching the themes that have been presented.
And staff have, a couple of times you've made mention that the staff's thinking has evolved, or you have responded to comments that have been made in the record and coming back to us with some changes to the document. I heard you say that you come back October 1 in our meeting with those formalized as a change? Or
I don't know that we'll be that far along, but we at that point should be clear enough as to what the next steps would be. And we're really talking about schedule, what we feel that it's important for us all to understand is what the timing of the steps would be from here on out. We do not anticipate having a response to comments document by October 1st.
No. But I was driving towards the changes staff are recommending. Some of what you've talked about are significant changes from the way the draft that's here today appears, how people who have reviewed it prior to today, and yet staff have offered that some of what was written we're thinking twice about and going
right
to change. So at some point there'll be a delete key hit, and some of that will go away and be replaced by other recommendations. How's that process going to unfold?
The process is that we've received comment, and there are sort of two big chunks that we will be working on from here forward. One is responding to comments, and then the other is revising the document. So we have a public draft document. Our proposal would be to revise that document to a final document that would have a response to comments, a new response to comments appendix that would come with it.
So, you know, I think that's my understanding of the process. It's been staff is responding to things they've heard, will continue. There'll be comments made today that enlighten us in new ways and help shape the document. We don't have a final document, a set of recommendations that will be acted upon, but by the end of October, when we meet in Klamath, we intend to have that ready for adoption October 29th, I would guess.
Well, and that's the That's what we want to come back to you on October 1st with, is our take on that.
And if I may engage you a bit on the modeling, just to fill in some of those details. I know some comment has been made questioning the model. I'd give staff a chance to underscore any points you want to make, and what you've gone through in the review, how you've analyzed those comments and the conclusions you've reached.
I will turn to Matt for anything that he would like to offer on that particular point.
Sure. Matt St. John, the lead for our TMDL development unit. I'll say a couple of things. I want to first reiterate some of the points that David made with respect to the evolution of the modeling tool that we used, and also remind folks that our TMDL model is one of the primary tools used in establishing the TMDL, but is not the only tool that was used. There were other lines of evidence that were critical to our analysis. With that said, with respect to the Klamath River TMDL model, in around 2004, I believe it was, we reached an agreement between EPA and PacifiCorps to have use of the model that was developed by their contractor, Dr. Mike Diaz of Watercourse Engineering, for development, for assessment of the relicensing of the hydroelectric facilities. Let me pause to say, is this what you were looking for? Okay, just making sure. We were incredibly grateful to PacifiCorps for providing us with the model. It provided a significant step forward for us, and we reached that agreement to use their model and to have communication about any modifications that were subsequently made to the model. Once we received the model, Tetra Tech, the EPA's contractor, made some modifications to the model that were based in part on some recommendations that had been provided by some early peer review. We then initiated peer review of the TMDL model in 2005, and this was at the request of some parties and at our request in other cases. The models were provided to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, both the Klamath Falls office and their Denver office in Colorado, which includes their modeling experts. The model was also provided to Dr. Scott Wells, who is the original, one of the primary developers of one of the models, the CEQOL-W2. And we finally provided the models to the original developer of the model application for the Klamath River, Dr. Michael Diaz of Watercourse Engineering. We then, over the course of a number of months, received review comments from the Bureau of Reclamation's office out of Denver, from a consultant to the city of Klamath Falls, Brown and Caldwell, as well as from Dr. Scott Wells from Oregon State University. Based on those comments, Tetra Tech made additional modifications to address the comments as we saw fit. Fast forwarding, we then applied our model for TMDL development. That was all during the model calibration phase. We then applied the model, ran modeling scenarios for purposes of TMDL development. The next step was that we went out to our legislatively required peer review. That's the process that's required under state law for any basin plan amendments. And so we provided our this beast for academic peer reviewers from across the country. It included both engineers, water quality modelers, and fisheries biologists, and a geomorphologist. We received peer review comments from those peer reviewers, and I should make it clear that those reviews were based on our staff report. They were looking at our staff report as well as additional documentation about the model. They were not actually looking into the mechanics of the model. They weren't actually running our models themselves, but they were looking at all the available documentation. We got peer review comments from those four peer reviewers. We provided the response to peer review comments, which is included as an appendix to our staff report. We then, based on the reviews that had happened, felt like we were ready to go out to public review, which is what we did. At that time, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation contracted with the U.S. Geological Survey to do an additional review of our model. And that happened during the public review process. And subsequently, there is a report out by the Geological Survey with a review and critique of our model. We are in the process. I should also say that PacifiCorps and their contractors also did a review, a thorough review of the model, and have provided significant comments as well. As David said, we are in the process of assessing those review comments. We take them very seriously. We appreciate the attention that was given. And we are simply in the stage where we are evaluating the comments and assessing how best to move forward, given the comments. On one read of the comments, folks could conclude that there are significant questions about the model that would require reworking. We take those seriously, and again, want to just emphasize that we're still assessing how we're going to respond and what additional documentation is necessary. We aren't ready to make that finding, and that's why David said that our suggestion is to come back in a couple of weeks here, it's really not that far away, October 1st, to you and let you know our thinking at that time with respect to the model and how we're going to move forward with respect to any potential revisions.
More to come.
And just one clarification on the peer review process. The peer review happened on a draft of the document that we call the peer review draft. The responses to comments that are an appendix to the public draft document our responses to those reviews, and the public draft incorporates changes that came about as a result of that peer review.
All right. And I would just add a footnote to what Matt said in terms of its chair's understanding that staff have had direct contact with those who, for the USGS, who reviewed this, have gone through it. We wouldn't be here today if there was some major problem, because it would not be my sense be worth our effort if we were going to go back and revisit that and start over again. So I just want everyone to know we have had that contact. Staff have reviewed it. They're keeping open, continuing to assess and review it, but as I said, executive officer, just check, see if they have an ashen look fate on their face when they come out of that meeting, and if they do, then we don't go forward. And if the sense was that it was worth, there are some things that will change, but they aren't significant at this time.
That's our feeling at this time.
Mr. Norton.
David, can you touch base and set at least a premise for the discussion today? The comments that I've seen relate how this TMDL affects or does not affect existing TMDLs on tributaries. Can you shed some light and maybe set a stage for, because I expect that we'll have a fair amount of comments on that today, and set that at this point and maybe provide some discussion and insight to that?
I'll take a crack at that. The draft suggested that, and I'm not sure that this was our intent. I think we were just inartful in the way that we described things, that the interim waiver would apply basin-wide. The conclusion that many folks reached reasonably was that that would override the existing Scott and Shasta TMDLs. We have kind of gone back and taken a look at that, and so our proposal at this point is that the conditional waivers that are already in place for the Scott and the Shasta should continue through to their expiration time. There are a number of subtleties to this that have to do with perception that additional actions for already listed constituents are proposed. We don't think that that's the case, and we will clarify that. There's also concern that new actions for unlisted constituents in particularly in the Scott and the Shasta are proposed. This would be nutrients in the Scott, for example, and sediment in the Shasta. It is true that was proposed as part of the draft. We think that is reasonable and appropriate given the non-point source policy framework within which we're working. We also understand that may have been a surprise to those folks in the Scott and Shasta communities, and that it makes sense then to step back from that and address those as part of a basin-wide ag waiver, and that the integration of the Scott and the Shasta conditional waivers into a basin-wide waiver would also extend to some of these additional constituents in order to be comprehensive and to be fair and consistent for all dischargers in the basin. There are several other particular issues that came up, and one of those relates to groundwater study in the Scott. We proposed as part of this TMDL that the groundwater study plan task that was identified in the Scott Action Plan be extended to include implementation of the study described in the plan. We think that that's important, and we would propose to you to retain that. There was also some concern that we were adding additional allocations relative to nutrients in the tributaries, and in particular that we were changing the rules in the Shasta. I want to be clear that while there are new appearing allocations for the Shasta, those allocations to specific nutrient constituents are consistent with the Shasta TMDL, and we don't see any additional new actions coming out of that. We're just making that align with the analysis that was done as part of the Klamath TMDL.
And in fact, the TMDL allocations for the Shasta and Scott, as they stand now, are written into this TMDL, correct?
Yes.
And further with that, on the waivers, you briefly touched on waivers. Is it right that for my clarity, that those existing waivers in the Shasta and Scott run their course through, looked like 2011 and 12 possibly?
That's right.
And then they get re-upped and maybe incorporated into something that's more basin-wide, but that is very much a public process, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Last question, the DO basin plan revision, can you touch light on that and how that fits in here? Because I think it is an important piece.
Sure. And let me back up just on the waivers. The renewal of the of Scott and Shasta waivers would be part of a public process,
yes,
as well. On the DO, one of the outcomes of the modeling analysis was that the existing basin plan dissolved oxygen objectives are not achievable even under natural conditions in the Klamath River, And so we have proposed, in conjunction with the Klamath TMDL, a basin-specific revision to the dissolved oxygen objective that would reflect the natural ability of the river system to achieve certain dissolved oxygen conditions. So that's the long and the short of it. The proposed revision would change the existing objective to one that's based instead on oxygen saturation as a percent of the achievable oxygen saturation. That percentage is proposed as 85%. And we also propose a minimum DO objective. This would be an instantaneous minimum that DO should not fall below a value of 6 milligrams per liter at any time or place.
And time schedule for that DO objective to meant for us?
We, at this point, are still anticipating that would become before you at the October 28th and 29th meeting.
Thank you.
And if you could, David, just identify the members of the TMDL team, and I would ask those staff to stand and be recognized so that folks in the audience can make contact throughout the day if they care to.
Matt St. John is the TMDL Development Unit Lead. Brian McFadden worked on the temperature portions of the analysis. Clayton Krager worked on the nutrient and dynamics portion. Samantha Olson, staff counsel, is heavily involved. And Ben Zabinski worked on the implementation plan. Have I left anybody out?
No.
Okay. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're going to do something a bit